Good afternoon. My name is Molly Metzger. I grew up in suburban Chicago and moved to St. Louis 3 years ago to accept a professor position at Washington University's Brown School of Social Work. My work at WashU focuses on segregation in housing, segregation by race and by social class. I am now proud to call South St. Louis City my home. I'm here today because I am deeply angry about the history of policies that we've inherited. I began learning about the history of U.S. housing policy as a student at Northwestern University. I took a class with the sociologist Mary Petillo, who became one of my mentors. In her class, I learned about the history of redlining, racially restrictive covenants, blockbusting, and panic peddling, all of these policies that created legal segregation operating from the federal government on down. Many people think of the problem of segregation in terms of the problems of high poverty neighborhoods, which in St. Louis are disproportionately African American. But I think about the issue a little differently. The root of the problem doesn't lie in black neighborhoods. White Americans are actually much more segregated. We are much more likely to live around people who look like we do compared to people of color. And this side of segregation is not just about individual choices. It's also about government policies paving the way, paying for suburban sprawl, for white flight, and ultimately for segregation. That's all subsidized housing. We actually spend much more subsidizing rich people than we do subsidizing poor people. And this history has led to a landscape of opportunity that is not equal and is not fair. As a professor, my work has come to focus on justice for these past wrongs. Earlier this year, after speaking with dozens of Section 8 renters in our region, I wrote a policy brief about Section 8 housing vouchers and where they are used in St. Louis. It is thought that if you have a Section 8 voucher, it gives you more housing choices, that you can shop around the private rental market and decide where you want to live with your family. But in reality, there are so many constraints on the program, most people end up in low-income, highly segregated neighborhoods. And maybe they're happy in lower-income neighborhoods. Maybe that's where their roots are. Maybe that is their preference, but maybe it's not. And maybe they would like to live in some other part of the region. So changes in Section 8 policy are just one of the ways that we can move toward a more integrated and a more just St. Louis. And if we are to face the challenge of segregation, we all need to be on board. We all need to consider ways that these patterns of segregation are being redefined, and to consider ways to promote equal opportunity. These strategies should include housing policies that support integration, but also policies that invest directly in low-income communities and communities of color. People should not have to move in order to enjoy healthy, livable, safe communities. At the end of the day, what I want for all St. Louisans is the opportunity to thrive.
Good afternoon. My name is Tabari Coleman. I'm the father of a beautiful 2-year-old girl named Amari Louise. As you can see, she has white skin and blue eyes, curly brown hair. When we're out together, I've had some people ask me, "Is this your child?" or "Whose child is this?" It's hard for me because my daughter is biracial. While society uses skin color and other markers to place people into boxes, all those things related to who's black, who's white, who's not, I don't get to make those decisions for her. While her skin color may afford her some white privilege, it may also disadvantage her in some communities where she chooses to identify as a woman of color. Racism isn't something that just impacts black people. Racism impacts all of us. It denies white people the opportunity to forge relationships with people of color. Instead, it makes assumptions that may not be true. We all, in some ways, suffer the consequences of racism when we don't think about our own socialization. One of my favorite quotes is by author, educator, and actor Lisa Delpit. She says, "We must learn to be vulnerable enough to allow the realities, to allow our world to turn upside down in order to allow the realities of others to edge themselves into our consciousness." I have no idea what it's like to be a white woman, a gay man, or a police officer. But if I can take a moment and just be vulnerable and think about what those things might be like for them, Maybe then I can have the empathy that's necessary to embrace others where they are. Not to try to change them, nor to even fully accept it, but at least to embrace them. When the Missouri History Museum was celebrating STL 250, the 250th anniversary of the city, they had a box for folks to leave letters that will be put into a time capsule to be opened 50 years from now in 2064. So I wrote about my daughter being biracial and my hope for her. I hope that 50 years from now, the city of St. Louis will be a more welcoming place for her, that she will live in an inclusive city that embraces and accepts her, whether she decides to identify as a white woman, as a black woman, or as both. Wouldn't that be great for her? This is what I expect and what I hope for all St. Louisans: racial equity. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Starsky Wilson. I am blessed to serve as pastor of St. John's Church, the beloved community in North St. Louis, CEO of Deaconess Foundation, and I've been honored over the course of the last 10 months to serve as co-chair with my friend Rich McClure of the Ferguson Commission. I begin today with thanks for those, Molly and Amari, who have shared of their hearts, of their stories, and of their lives with each and every one of us, and all of the citizens who have done exactly that over the course of these months as we've opened our meetings to hear from one another, to be vulnerable with one another, to share our hearts and to share our lives, to share our pains, so that we may get to resolution together. I also open with apologies, actually, to our Jewish citizens, brothers and sisters, that we opened this meeting on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, and some of them could not be with us for the sake of that. So we wish them sweet new year as they enter into this sacred time of celebration. As we come together on today, we offer thanks to our elected officials, to our hosts here at St. Louis Community College, Florissant Valley. They have hosted us on several occasions. We're thankful to the mayor of the city of St. Louis, Mayor Francis Lay, for being here, Senator Jamila Nasheed, and of course, a governor who has called, who called us all into being on November 18th. We give thanks, of course, to the commissioners who have given countless hours to this process themselves and have guided citizens throughout the region to commit more than 20,000 volunteer hours to this bold project in inclusive democracy. We also take the time very publicly to thank a committed staff led by our managing director Bethany Johnson-Javois, for the commitment for their clear guidance in keeping this work going each and every day. This was tough. And the only promise that we can make to the region is that it gets tougher. It gets tough if we take seriously the voices of the nearly 2,000 people who have come out to meetings, who have committed their time and given of their hearts and of their stories, who have given of their expertise to make our region a fairer, more inclusive place for our children to live. It's tough if we're thoughtful about the serious conversations that you will have to have with your children and I will have to have with my two-week-old about the last year of our region's existence and about the realities that are abiding in this 198-page report. It gets tough. If we are clear about accountability, if we are serious about racial equity, if we will pursue justice for all, if we place youth at the center of our conversations, and if we really do want all to have an opportunity to thrive, it gets tough, but it's worth it. It is worth it for every citizen who's under the sound of our voices today and everyone who has clicked through the report today to take it seriously, to find their place, to sure disagree with some things, but to say that of 189 recommendations, there are three that will change my life and will change my child's life, and so I will engage in that. To take seriously that this process has been a product of social innovation for the entire country to see, that no, you don't solve a community's problems by going back behind closed doors. You do this work in plain view. you understand that policies are value statements, and budgets clearly state what we think are morally important. And so you do the work together. You do it with people you disagree with. You commit to stay around the table. You listen to diverse voices. You come to some common ground that is more than the lowest common denominator. And then you work hard. You work really hard to make it happen. And so today we honor the milestone of the completion of the report with all of you who have been a part of the process. And we say to those who have not, there's still time and there's still room. And we need you for this work to go forward. Today is a milestone, and we noted appropriately that we have offered a path toward racial equity, not the path, but a path. We invite other people into it, and we note that this work requires accountability. So while today we focus on the process and engagement, tomorrow the watchword is accountability. Noting that everyone in this room is accountable for making sure that, yes, this does not become dust on a shelf. Everyone must engage and ask those who ask for your votes, ask those who ask for your dollars, ask those who ask for your commitment of time, whether they have committed to racial equity in the public spaces in which you live, and hold them accountable for the work that they have done toward these recommendations that we as a community have put forward for all of us to live out together. Again, we've been pleased to engage in this work with our partner and friend, Rich McClure. We invite him to come and give you welcoming comments at this time.
Thank you, Starsky. We present this report with the realization and the understanding that it reveals uncomfortable truths about this region that we all call home. And as difficult as some parts of this report are to read, it should be read with the understanding that it also presents ways to address these truths. And that there are people of goodwill who are very well prepared and committed to engage in that work and eager to do so. The report explores and attempts to address the social condition and inequities that young people across our region have raised and other collective voices in our region that they live and struggle with these inequities every day. It is very important that as we understand the national and international response to Ferguson, that have made clear that this problem is not unique to St. Louis, it is nonetheless our reality. So our hope is that in reading this report, that it will begin for some, continue for others, a learning process. And we're confident that people will discover things they don't know, that they'll be challenged to rethink things they already knew, and they'll find things that they don't agree with. But this group of dedicated commissioners have been privileged to sit around what has become our region's kitchen table. And we have heard and we have listened to understand because many of us didn't understand. And so when you find something to disagree with, as sometimes we did, don't turn away. Keep going. Embrace that discomfort. Because the best way to experience what we've experienced and to now build upon this is to realize that you can be committed to staying at the table, to listening, to finding common ground. And we found among the commission and among the working groups far more common ground than we ever expected to find, Governor. And I think it was because we all realized we needed to be committed to listen, to understand, and to work through our disagreements. We have particularly been thankful for the opportunity to co-chair the commission. We've worked hard, all of us on the commission, to be good partners on this journey. Starsky and I have worked hard to be good partners. And the two of us came to this work because Governor Nixon asked us to come to this work, but because we have a shared faith that is based upon love and grace, and it's committed to peace and justice. And we believe that those principles, regardless of your faith, can compel all of us to engage and to act. And so this process has been inspiring. It's been compelling because in our community, there are grassroots organizations and advocates that have tremendous energy. There are civic and business and not-for-profit entities that have incredible capacity, and taken together, these have remarkable opportunity for transformation. We are incredibly generous in giving as a region. We have tremendous capacity. There are wonderful things that are right about this region and progress that has been made. And with appropriate alignment, we know that the capacity to deal with this deep and divisive issues is present, is real, and can be engaged to act. It's our privilege now to formally present the report to the governor. So Starsky and I will do that and call the governor to come and to share his remarks. Now, I want to say a couple of things. First of all, Governor, this is the people's report. And we have so characterized it because we believe our responsibility has been to the people. You called us into existence and you challenged us to take that charge seriously. And so we have done so. Secondly, there won't be very many printed copies of this report because this is a digital first report. And the staff team and others and Starsky, who envisioned this, said that it was a digital first report because, it's your line.
If it's digital, you can never, ever put it on the shelf.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It will go on a nightstand, though. Finished red. Good afternoon. On behalf of Missourians here and all across our great state, I want to thank each and every member of the Ferguson Commission for your unflinching courage at a moment of reckoning for our state and nation. For your integrity and for your dedication to transformational change. I would also like to thank personally Starsky and Rich for their commitment to the future of this region and their outstanding stewardship of this commission. This is a remarkable mix of folks, and that was by design. More than 300 citizens throughout the St. Louis region applied to be on this commission. We wanted to put together a group of individuals with perspectives and life experiences that represented the diversity of the region, racially, demographically, and economically. Authentic, credible, a group that as a whole would equal more than the sum of its parts. And we found in it a commission that includes cops and CEOs, protesters and professors, business owners, ministers, and nonprofit leaders. You, my friends, are this community. This work would not have moved forward without the exceptional gifts each of you brought to this process, the gifts of passion and compassion, wisdom and empathy, impatience and steadfastness. Because of those gifts, the people in this region embraced the process, knowing that the journey of these past 10 months would not be an empty exercise. Their faith in you gave them the courage to share personal struggles with some of the most deep-rooted and difficult problems facing our nation, in the hopes that they would lead to real and lasting change. I remember the day last November when we gathered for the first time in the Missouri History Museum. We were still reeling from the unrest following the death of Michael Brown and bracing for what might happen next. It was a flashpoint that ignited protest and soul searching across our nation. But here in Missouri, we listened, we learned from one another, and we're getting better. We transformed the angst and pain of protest and are now embarking on a path towards progress together. I am more hopeful than ever that the people of this region will embrace positive change and emerge stronger and more united than ever before. It has not been easy. Change is hard. The challenges of Ferguson are the same challenges that have riven our nation for hundreds of years in the struggle for equality and justice. But what has emerged so clearly in the past year is a mutual abiding commitment to the people and communities of this region. Even in our most contentious moments, we have begun to work in good faith with thousands of ordinary men and women who want to be part of making things better. Good faith, it's not a phrase I use lightly. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. So the good book says. Working in good faith means working in a hopeful spirit. It means believing that things can change, even if we can't quite yet see the shape of that future clearly. Faith comes more easily to some than others. As we have seen throughout this past year, there have been doubters and cynics. That is to be expected. But the way to prove this work means something is to do something. And much has already been done. The commission created a protected space, a kitchen table, where all members of the community could air their concerns openly. Some experiences that had only been spoken about privately were shared publicly for the first time. People quickly learned three things. First, that they were not alone. Second, that their voices would be heard. And third, that their concerns would be taken seriously. That is the power of bearing witness. Those conversations brought deeply entrenched issues to the surface, ranging from long-standing injustices in our municipal court system to the lack of trust between law enforcement and some parts of the community, to the need for greater personal responsibility in keeping our families and our streets safe. We need respect for the men and women of law enforcement who perform very difficult jobs. They care deeply about their communities, the communities they serve. They know they need to trust. They know they need trust to do their jobs effectively. But trust is a two-way street. When we challenge the actions and attitudes of others, we must also look inward and challenge our own behavior and beliefs. The commission provided a forum and a solution-oriented focus that built momentum and generated political will for meaningful reform. That galvanized the region and the state to act. For example, we passed sweeping municipal court reforms, historic legislation that will ensure that municipal courts fulfill their original and intended purpose, protecting and serving the public. We created the Office of Community Engagement, which over the past year has helped empower at-risk youth, including a summer job league for thousands of young people in St. Louis and Kansas City. We provided an additional $1 million to promote literacy for children at-risk school districts of Normandy and Riverview Gardens. Today, an unprecedented collaboration among more than 20 St. Louis area school districts is providing resources and support to help these struggling schools and the thousands of children who attend them. In addition, last month, I also announced an effort to strengthen law enforcement training standards through improved tactical training, fair and impartial policing, and a greater emphasis on the health and well-being of officers. My Director of Public Safety, Lane Roberts, and Captain Ron Johnson, Chairman of our Police Officer Standard and Training Commission, are leading this effort and will deliver their recommendations to me on December 1st. Is there more to be done? Yes. That's why I'm looking forward to reviewing the recommendations and priorities in four key areas that emerged from the countless hours of discussion and deliberation. Justice for all. Youth development. Opportunity to thrive. Racial equity. I commit to you today that these tireless efforts will not be in vain. Our journey will continue. Through the sheer force of our collective will and our personal acceptance of responsibility for our community's safety and well-being, we will keep moving forward together. We are engaged in nothing less than the unfinished work of perfecting our democracy to comport with the principles on which it was founded. Together, we will lead St. Louis, our state, and our country towards a brighter future of justice and opportunity for all. I could not be more proud of our state and region for embracing these challenges. Where others have stepped back, Missourians have stepped up, setting an example for the rest of the nation. And we will continue to do more. We will keep talking, keep listening, keep learning, and most importantly, keep moving forward. Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you, Governor. We appreciate your remarks and we appreciate your faith in us. Starsky and I now are just very briefly going to have a couple of remarks to kind of summarize a bit about the approach and the content on the report, and then we'll be pleased to open for questions at that time. The first thing I would say is that the process that we followed, we hope and believe and trust can be a model process for our region and perhaps others in our state to follow. And that is of openness and transparency, of immediately posting all of our work, of including members of the community at every step of the way, of listening carefully through public comment. And in fact, the priorities were set by those who attended our first few meetings, and we polled them and we asked them, what do you want us to look at? And so when a reporter asked Starsky and I a question recently, well, did you have in mind an agenda for the commission? We said no, because the community set the agenda. And we listened carefully. And through that process of bold, inclusive democracy, what we found is that there was great wisdom in what we were hearing. And that the priorities that had been set for us and established by that polling were in fact identical to the priorities that the commission set when we polled them separately and privately. And I think that reflects, Governor, that this commission is reflective of the community. And I think one of the innovations of this process of openness and working through the digital world in order to be able to be careful of all of our disclosures is that we have been able to say, let's apply some lenses to what we do. And this, I too think, will be a model for work going forward as other organizations step up to embrace what's been done here. And so we said, apply to each policy, each program, each investment, each decision you make, whether you're a city council or a school board or a civic organization or a corporation, apply a racial equity lens. Will this approach relieve disparities? Will it cause disparities? Does it move the region forward for racial equity? Will this have multi-generational impact? Does this have scale and importance to apply to the next generation and the next? And then health equity. Will this move the standards of health forward in such a way that quality care and access, because you can't learn, you can't be productive on a job, you can't grow if you're not healthy? And those three lenses, I think, when applied to public policy, will be a model for the way in which our region thinks going forward. And then we prioritize based on whether it was transformational, whether it was unflinching, whether it in effect had a bold and transformative impact. And so I think this process of having these lenses is a model. So when folks say, well, the commission has a lot there, it's a broadly based report, and many commissions were very narrow in what they did as they have operated in other regions, but this one was charged to be bold and to be broadly based, and we had to be, because to do so would be to ignore, not to do so would be to ignore the underlying causes on why we are here and what brought us here. So to the governor, thank you for the challenge to do this work. To Mayor Slay, thank you for your engagement and your work in these areas and for your processes of embracing the commission's recommendations. The county executive could not be here today, but we have met with him and engaged with he and his staff and other elected and local officials. Senator, thank you so much for your work and your engagement as well. Haven't started yet. And that is exactly right and true for all of us. Thank you, ma'am. So with that, I'd like Starsky to take the moment.
Now, you say words like accountability, and you got to note that they're good for everybody. So when you start out by calling out names of elected officials and you forget State Representative Sharon Pace, and you forget State Representative Rochelle Gray, and you know there are other elected officials in the room whom you may not well know, so you just say stuff like, if there are any electeds that are in the room, would you please stand and be acknowledged so that we might thank you. Thank you very much for being here. Jones. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I see the peace sign, Reverend Pearson. I see it in the room as well. We note accountability, and accountability for what? Accountability for the reality of our region. The reality that we have conversations about economic development most times, and over the last 10 months, we've rather talked about economic mobility. What does it mean and what does it take for a family to do better for their children than they do for themselves? And how difficult is that to achieve in our region? Well, among the 50 top metropolitan areas, we have found that we're 42nd. We must be accountable for that. That 1 in 5 children in our region live in poverty, we must be accountable for that. For the fact that we have so structured and ordered our lives together that between 63106 and 63105, there's an 18-year life expectancy, and that stretches to 40 years if you say from Kinlock to some of our West County suburbs. We've got to be accountable for that. One of the ways we've sought to be accountable for this work is to do it in open space, to make sure that we are transparent in our work, to follow the ordered priorities that the community set for us in our first meeting on December 1st, to make sure that we are always in conversation with community members and there's always time for testimony in our meetings. But there's greater accountability than that. There is the personal accountability that we as commissioners will go back to our communities, our neighborhoods, and we've got to work for this as well. I take a point of privilege to note that I was greatly impressed and compelled by the constellation of people who are coming together to do this work. You know, when the governor calls, you try to get to a yes, you know, but it was, there were some things I needed to nudge me. And one of the things was a conversation that I had in the old parsonage of our church with representatives of different groups in our community, but mostly young people. Pastor Blackman was there, Brittany Packnett was there. And we asked Brittany and Alexis and Ashley and Montega and Tori, voices that had been raised since August 9th through the announcement of the commission in October, whether this was a work they thought appropriate for us to do. And they set for us some appropriate accountabilities. These young people said, yes, but if it looks like it's a show, you got to be willing to walk away. If it looks like folks aren't going to be serious about it, then don't play with our community. And if you're not willing to do that to make sure that it's right and it's real, then don't accept it. And with those assurances, we said yes. The assurance of accountability with people whom we love and trust. And now that same accountability extends to all of you. It extends to everyone who reads this report. It extends to everyone who knows that there is a cost to the racial inequities and disparities in our region. The University of Missouri St. Louis Public Policy Center said that that cost was $14 billion in gross domestic product of our region in 2012. And those magnates of industry who provide leadership for our region should answer the question and should be accountable for that loss of resources to our region. And those who govern our public life, our health and human services, should answer for those life expectancy disparities. And those who ask for our votes and will come a-knocking over the course of the time between now and next November should account for how they align with the community's stated agenda. And so for those who have asked the question, what's next? We as a commission have already been in dialogue about how we can set in place a process of accountability, measurement, and evaluation using a collective impact model, but with a mind also if there are things missing from this methodology. While we will have an organization left behind to do this kind of monitoring, to continue communication, to assure mutually reinforcing activities, to set in place some shared measurement system for the community based upon this common agenda, we know that collective impact has gaps. And what we need is not necessarily a method or a model, we need a movement. A movement for positive change throughout the St. Louis region that illustrates to the rest of the nation that racial equity is an appropriate goal that can be pursued by a metropolitan area in the heart of America, even within the context of the history of America. And movements require grassroots. Movements require grassroots advocacy, activism, and agitation. Movements challenge power and hold it accountable. And so we're pleased not only that there are organizations throughout our community and civic leadership who are aligning with the report and asking what they can do. I am particularly pleased if there's a constellation of grassroots organizations who has already ordered on November 1st to host a meeting organizing accountability around some of these commission's recommendations. That groups like the Coalition Against Police Crimes and Repression and the Organization for Black Struggle, and Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, and Metropolitan's Congregations United, and Empower Missouri, and the Scholarship Foundation, and Students for Change have already gotten together and said, of these 189, we think these are most important, and these are the things we're going to call elected officials account to. And I invite you to join them, because accountability will make implementation happen. Accountability will make sure that we get to a better place. Accountability will assure racial equity. But now this is our work together. This is your work to do, and we will do it with you. Thank you very much. At this time, we are set and ready to receive questions that you may have.
Well, in response to the dialogue from Cincinnati, and we learned a great deal from them, and this is, of course, a broadly based charge that includes poverty issues and education and economics, and their commission focused on citizen law enforcement relations, is we said because of the wide array of municipalities affected here and governmental units affected, that it is our hope and belief that the recommendations that we have made in the accountable bodies we have identified and the kind of advocacy that's been described here from all across our community, maybe from folks who say, I can't sign on to all the recommendations, but these ones are really important to me, so I'm going to work on those, just as been described here, that will engender the kind of pressure to get accountability here, and that is our hope and belief.
Yes, I have the first 64 pages, Is there an executive summary somewhere? I like kind of getting to the point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're with you.
Yeah. There is. I want to know why you stopped at 64, by the way.
It's three.
It's three. There you go. There you go. So we have ordered, we didn't label, we consider that early section, the executive summary, we probably could have labeled a little better. This is the value also of being a living document and online, so we'll make sure to point that out as we can update the digital platform. For those who didn't capture it, you see the digital platform that's here on the screens, and we invite you to navigate there, appreciating the printed version. Online, you have the opportunity to navigate through some of these narrative stories of people who have been directly impacted and affected, and we believe that this is a critical element not to be lost in the printed page.
So you say at the beginning, where is it exactly?
It is at the beginning. It's just that we haven't segmented it out. So it's the first few pages that you read, so thank you. There are significant elements that can be done without the state legislature. Actually, you'll see in the 189 calls to action, we're clear to identify accountable bodies in each. Some of those accountable bodies are local, they're regional. Some of them are not even elected actors. And so we encourage people to find places that they can work. They may have relationships with some of these accountable bodies. We invite them to advance them. But we've been careful to share, even with media as they've asked these questions, to note that legislation is not the only way to get these things done, that there are things that are moving around collective tables to advance some of this work now. And there are things that are happening not just at the state level. There are things that we call for in this report, including an increased minimum wage. And we see movement on that in the city over the course of the last month, and that is not something that a national outlet would have even seen or been accountable for. We've seen civilian oversight growing in the city. That's something that's called for in this report that can be expanded throughout the rest of the region. It's being pursued for the kinds of accountabilities that we talk about in the report. So we note that there are wide accountable bodies here. The legislature has a role to play. So does executive authority. So do local settings of governance as well. Yes, sir.
Thank you.